Welcome to the Canine Classroom, a podcast for dog training professionals and dog enthusiasts where we discuss training, behavior, and everything in between. We're two friends and dog trainers that share a passion for dogs. We're constantly learning, exploring, and questioning each other's ideas as well as our own so we can become better at what we do. We're here to provide helpful advice, have open conversations, ask questions, get answers, as well as hear from colleagues and experts in the industry, regardless of method and training style. So take a seat and get your notepad out because class is in session.
What's going on, everyone? This is Vinny Viola. It's so weird saying my name. I like when Anthony says it better. I'm here with Anthony DeMarinis and Jen Banks.
Wow, you just said my name like your Siri. Wow.
I know. Well, that's how Siri says your name, so you're going to take it. And we're with the Canine Classroom, I believe, right? That's the name of our podcast, Anthony.
I don't know.
So today we have Jen with us. Jen, I think she knows this because I've reached out to her, but she had a big impact on me as a trainer. And I've definitely reached out to her during some like pivotal times in my life and career. So I'm happy to have her on finally. And would you like to introduce yourself, kind of tell everyone who you are?
Yeah, thank you. We've had some really awesome training conversations. So I'm excited / scared that we're now recording one of them.
We're going to talk long enough to realize that we don't even like each other. No, I'm kidding.
This is the moment and it's going to, you know, be recorded forever. So I'm Jen. My maiden name is Banks. All my social media.
Oh, sorry about that.
Well, because nobody knows, right? Professionally, I started as a Banks, and I'm in the process of changing it still. So I'm Jen Humphrey. If you're ever getting an email from me or anything, Jen Banks. If I'm on social media, I'll go change it right after this episode, so everyone's extra confused. I have a pet dog training place in Central Mass. So we do Central Massachusetts, Worcester County. So we do group classes, off-leash training, private lessons in home. I have some sort of new services we've been offering the past year or so that are exciting as well. And I got my start in service dogs and then decided I needed to like actually make money. So I came to the pet dog world. And here we are. I have two full-time employees that train here as well, and then I have a woman who comes in and runs play groups for me once a week, and that's me.
What's
so
everyone knows?
What's that?
Can you just share the name of your business so everyone knows?
Yeah, that would be you're the business guy, right?
Once that's why he's here.
Yeah, no, that would be smart. I'm with The Right Paw. We're in Princeton, Massachusetts. And you can find therightpod.com. And we're on Facebook and Instagram as The Right Pod and YouTube. All my YouTube is my old business name, but the actual name of the channel is The Right Pod. So that's me.
And you do sports with your dogs, right? Maybe tell us a little bit about that.
I do sports with my dogs. Part of why I'm so tired is because the class I'm taking with one of my dogs ran like 45 minutes late last night, and it's an hour away. So I got back a little late last night. I do. I've dabbled in agility a little bit. My Shiba Bamba has a few agility titles. I'm not doing agility currently. I'm doing a lot of rally, AKC rally, AKC obedience. So Moon Pie just got her open title. I don't know if you guys know anything about AKC obedience, but she got her open.
I don't know much, so yeah, I was hoping you can kind of help us, you know, learn a little bit about that.
Yeah, so you've got in and I am not an authority on, if anyone's looking for people who
you're
know
gonna
a
be
lot
my authority on
obedience,
it.
Just gonna... go somewhere else. But
the pressure is on.
Yeah, right. And you guys are gonna title this top authority in AKC obedience handbook. That's definitely not me.
Oh, she fits right in. She just came up with the title of her own episode, Vinny.
That's it. That's gonna be the title. This is
Oh,
perfect for. Usually Vinny comes up with it.
I've had interviews named worse than that. So Moon Pie is my 8-year-old Staffordshire Bull Terrier. She's my first obedience dog. So she's in AKC obedience. You have novice, open, and utility, and you have to qualify 3 times in a class to get a title. So she's got her novice title. Took us about 2 years to get her open title, which we finally wrapped up in the fall. And I was so traumatized by the experience that I thought I was done with her, specifically with her with obedience. But I decided 2 days ago that I'm going to train her for utility because why not? She's 8 years old, she's happy, she's healthy, and if nothing else, it'd be a good learning experience for me because I've not taught most of the exercises in utility. So we're dabbling in training for that. We just started, and maybe I'll trial her in utility, maybe I won't, I don't know. And then I have her daughter, Rue, who's 5 now,
I can't
and
believe that she's 5 already. Holy
it's
crap.
yeah. Well, I tell people she's still a puppy because she's
Yeah.
horribly behaved. My family gives me shit all the time because she won the advanced level of the AKC Rally Nationals last year. So like they
Yeah.
come over and she's
But
jumping
she's
all
like
over them
untrained.
and biting them, and yeah, and not bite, you know, like she has to put her mouth on people and they're like, look at this champion dog. So she has her CD, which is like novice obedience, and we're doing a lot with rally. We're going for like a master and championship level titles in rally, which I've never done before. So she just had her first master showing over the weekend and did very well. She looked awesome. So I'm hoping
Didn't you
that
just win first place on that? Or
that was it. Yeah. So in master,
oh yeah.
so yeah. So for people who don't know, with rally, it's timed and scored. So
Oh, interesting.
you can get at max 100 points. You have to get a minimum of 70 points to just qualify. So you get awarded placement based on your score and your time. So there were several. I think there was one other 100 in the class, but I was a little bit faster than her. So I scored 100 and got first place in master class, and then it was kind of downhill from there because I made some mistakes, but it was still a great it was a
Damn,
great
that's stressful. So like you have to like do well, but then also do it within a time limit.
you have to do well and do
Or
it in a time
like,
limit,
oof.
and for the title I'm going for, you have to do it in 3 classes in one day. So there's a master, excellent, and advanced classes. So I'm competing in all 3 classes, and I have to qualify in all 3 classes, and I have to do that a minimum of 20 times to get this title that I'm chasing a title is what I'm doing
Wow.
right now. So,
And you're like raising kids and you have a business and it's a lot of stuff,
yeah. Well, and
right?
she and so we qualified for nationals again this year, and I want to go. And now I'm doing the math on like how do I qualify for nationals next year for the masters. So it's just a whole thing that's happening right now. That's what I'm doing with my sport. And I just started a obedience club for my business. So it's students of mine that are specifically interested in pursuing AKC style obedience or rally. So we meet twice a month, and they're a lot of fun. So I get my little obedience fix there as well.
I have a question. Well, you don't have to answer it. And
Yeah.
if you don't want, and I could edit
You
it
do
out
have
if
to
you don't
answer it.
want, if you don't like the question. But you mentioned before that you struggled with one of your dogs and that it was a little traumatizing. So I was kind of curious
No.
what you
So,
mean.
yeah. No, I'm happy to talk about it. So most obedience people, let me back up first, but because I want to say this before I forget. My like 95% of our classes here at the Right Paw are not competition style classes. There we're like a largely a family pet dog training facility, and I do have a few competition focused classes or clubs for folks that are really interested in it, but that's not what most people come here for. So if you talk to anyone who's been in obedience for any amount of time, they'll tell, I've been told that open obedience is where people like go and die because they just get stuck there forever. And so I started trialing in open right after I have two daughters that are like 2.5 years apart or something like that. They're fairly close.
She knows the ages of her dogs like
Is
perfectly. She's like, yeah, my daughter's like, I don't
it
know. They're like, they're
close? I was
somewhere
thinking
in
the
here.
same thing. And when I was pregnant with my first, I also brought home, we bred Moon Pie and we brought one of her daughters home, right? So I brought a puppy home, got pregnant, moved, COVID hit, bought a business, like all like just like my life just kind of exploded in a good way, but just like it got really chaotic, right? And that was at right after I had my first kid, that's when I was starting to really get us into open obedience. And Moon Pie, through both pregnancies, didn't want to work with me. Like she would, I'd go out into the yard just to play with her, and she would stand at the back door and like shake and like want nothing
Interesting.
to do with me. And I like it was definitely pregnancy related, but it was also like her daughter is a real bitch. Like she's just like such a bitch. And that was also affecting our relationship. So here we are 5 years later, and I feel like we're finally like back to where we were post like pre-COVID, really. Like our obedience and working relationship finally feels fun again. It's been like a really stressful few years of settling her in, and I realize she's a much more sensitive dog than I ever thought she was, because she doesn't seem like a sensitive dog. So we were going through open with all that like weird relationship stuff happening. And then also open is just really hard. Like it's just some of the exercises she'd do wonderful, and then there's a broad jump in open obedience. So she'd like cut the corner on the broad jump, which is like the last exercise, and you end cue for that. Like that's just an automatic, you failed. I had one point, this dog, I would always get complimented on her healing. Like she has really beautiful healing, or she did. And I had one trial where you have to heal them off leash, and she like just left me. Like she just, and in obedience, you're not really supposed to use your voice a lot to, re-cue them and all of that. So I'm a fairly new competitor. Like even though I've started, my first obedience trial was probably 6 years ago, right? So that's I'm a fairly new competitor. And showing Moon Pie in open obedience was extremely humbling, because I up until then I would watch other people in the ring and be very judgy, like be very judgy. And
So
then I lived
easy.
it. And then I lived it, and I was like, never again will I judge someone, because I've lived it and thought I was, thought we were in a much better place than we were for some of our trials. So it was a combination of all those things, and it was, you only need three qualifying scores to get your title, and I think I did like 10 trials with her. That's a lot of failures before, and it's
Yeah, damn.
a lot of failures where I'm arranging for childcare, driving really far, or like leaving my
All the
family for a
logistics.
full Saturday or whatever, just to be like, ah, oh, we fucked it up again. Like better luck
Yeah.
next time, I guess, right?
It's
But
interesting though, because it is interesting though, because you're training with a specific goal in mind, and then all these little things that you don't anticipate. Sometimes you might anticipate it, and sometimes you don't, and you try and always be as prepared as possible, and then shit hits the fan, or it's like, oh yeah, this went really well, we're doing so good with this, and then you get to the trial and it just goes to shit.
Because you compete in agility, right? So it's that's it is it's like and something I've struggled with as well is finding a good mentor in my sport. Because I have had I had still have. Like I there's a woman that is a mentor to me for a lot of pet dog stuff and really introed me to a lot of the like novice level rally and obedience. And then I wanted to go higher, and it was just something she didn't have experience with. So when I went from like, oh, I have a good mentor that I can talk to, oh, now I'm doing stuff that she hasn't done, and I have to find someone else who can help me. And it's very challenging because there's a lot. I mean, not to get into like methodologies, but a lot of the places around me don't really want to support how I train. So I don't have a lot of places where I can go where I can train the way I like to train. So that has been a big challenge, and especially at a high level, right? Like there's a lot of places I could go for novice stuff that don't care how I train, but getting in with some of the higher level folks, it can be politically difficult.
Because either let's say they've won whatever,
Yeah.
they've titled X amount of dogs at this high level. What ends up happening is if they've done it always this particular way, they're set in their ways in many respects, and they're kind of expecting it to be that way for all their clients or all the dogs that they're working with those teams, you know?
Yeah, and they can be very rigid in their thinking. Because there's a place that I trial, and it's actually a place I'm taking a class at right now, who they're very much like an all positive place. Which for the stuff I'm doing now is great because my dogs are they're trained. I need more of the training than they do at this point, right? Yeah, they could just be really inflexible. Like I've done a private lesson there with Moon Pie, who is clicker trained, and I trained a very robust clicker response. Like she does a very in like the clicker to her means stop whatever you're doing and come to me and like beat the shit out of me till I feed you, basically, right? Like that's what I've taught her. And her specifically, she's very mentally, she's very inflexible. Once you teach her something, it requires great effort and great planning to change that. And I did a private with someone who's very well known in my area for obedience. And she had seen me at a trial and was very impressed with how my dog looked. And I was like, oh, maybe you'd be a good coach for me. Let's try this. And she spent the entire lesson trying to retrain my clicker response. I was like, why? Like, I don't.
Was there a reason for that? Like, what was the purpose?
Because she just had a different preference. She wanted my dog to be able to stay in place when hearing the clicker. That's it. That's what she just wanted that for probably stuff that she teaches. And I'm like, that's not the amount of effort that's gonna take me to change. I'm
Yeah,
just
and
not gonna.
it really
I'm not
isn't
gonna do that.
like, is it really that important for
Exactly.
what you're trying to achieve?
Exactly. Especially when you're seeing, like, we're already looking, or at the time we were, this is like pre-open obedience, so I actually did they, we looked very good at the time. We weren't having any issues in the ring at the time. But yeah, you run into a lot of that, like, oh, I have this preference, and I'm going to get really stuck on it. And whenever I have a lesson like that, I hold on to how it made me feel, and try to make sure I'm not putting myself in a position where I'm making one of my clients feel like that.
That's so funny. I was just going to bring that up to you. I was going to say, is it, do you find when a client comes to you, and I can only speak for myself, so maybe you guys have different experience, but for me, I personally get a lot of people who will hire me and say, like, I want to train this way. Like, especially today with social media, I find that the methodology stuff is popping up more. A lot of trainers always say that, oh, clients never ask about method. Bullshit. Like that, like for me, I get that question for inquiries at least like 2, 3 times a week when people call. And so I'm now thinking, like, to what you said, what about when the client says to you in a lesson, look, I only want to train this particular way. I'm curious, like, how, like, what you think about that now, reversing the role, because for you were talking about as a
Absolutely.
student, and then it becomes, okay, now I'm the coach. and this is what they're asking. And in a way, for me at least, when I think about it, it really challenges me and pushes me to really have to sometimes think out of the box, where I might say, well, I could just do this, but you want to take this particular approach, which, maybe I'm happy to do. I guess it depends on the situation, but it makes you sometimes think about, like, forces you to think outside the box, I feel.
Absolutely. I don't think I experience that as much now as I used to, because we do a lot of screening for that before anyone even comes here. So like you can see what we're posting and you can see what's on our website and get a pretty, like we have a whole, I think I have a whole philosophy page on my website, which I think the folks who really, really care, they're going to read my philosophy page and be like, meh, maybe not, right? But I will get clients who say they want to train a certain way, but are only saying it because those are the only buzzwords they know. Because if you ask more questions, it's like, oh, you want to feel good about what you're doing with your dog, which is different than I want to train under this methodology. So, I find that more now. And there certainly are situations where I have someone, they want to work with me. My several veterinarians refer us a lot. So we'll have folks who, even though they might have strong beliefs, they really want to work with us because their vet said, go to the right paw, right? And so those folks, whether we're doing privates or group classes or whatever, we have a conversation about exactly what they are and are not comfortable with. And then I explain any limitations I might have. So it might be great, right? Like it might be, yeah, no problem. We don't need to use XYZ to get results. Or it might be, hey, I feel pretty confident I can get you here, but I don't know that I can promise anything more than that. If you really, really, really want to train like that, there are other trainers that that's all they do. And you should go there because you'd be happier, right? You got to kind of weigh it based on, I don't know, I do a lot of phone consultations. So I certain clients, I really want to push them to go elsewhere because I think both them and I will be happier. Other clients, I want to get them in and see how far we can get with their dog once they're working with us and develop some trust in what we're doing and are seeing the process and realizing that their dog is like super happy learning what they want to learn and all that. So it definitely makes you think outside the box. But you want to also, I don't want to take on a client that I'm like, oh, I'm confident that I can't get you the results without my tried and true sort of processes. So, yeah.
Do you have a place where you find yourself kind of sticking to your guns ever? Or like
Yeah.
maybe you have a client that, like, I do have some clients that are just like, tell me what to do.
Yeah.
like they just
Sure.
basically are like that. Or are there things where you find yourself, or are those people that you're saying you just refer away right away? Like, is there someone in the middle where like you want them as a client, but you're really gonna stick to your guns on like a certain thing?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So any time there is a serious safety concern. And we're not a place that is like that. I know there are some places that is like, oh, everyone's dog wears this sort of collar and gets this and that. You'll see everything in our classes. So we're definitely not recommending any sort of equipment changes until after we see the dog and kind of determine what's best for them. But there are certain clients, because we do e-collar training. I had one client in particular. I don't think she'll listen to this,
Hey,
but
we
these
have like a million followers. No, I'm kidding.
so the, I did
Hopefully
have
she's not one of the 400 people listening to this.
well, so I did have this one client who reached out to me and just kind of had like, and this is personal preference, right? Because this might be another trainer's dream. Some trainers love to work with dogs like this, but for me personally was like my worst case nightmare scenario. Like rescue dog who had the behaviors before they got them and they were allowed to practice the behaviors for a year. does not give a shit about anyone in the house, just likes to jump on the kids and bite them, will spend hours in the backyard because they can't get him in, cannot be handled at the vet, can't even get a muzzle on the vet because he'll bite. The only play he's ever done is in the living room where he demands play. The people have never done anything with him outside. Will, from the other end of the house, if you open a door, he will find a way to get through that door and then not come back
You're
to you.
describing my ideal dog.
Yeah, there you go, right? And it gets
Yeah.
worse from there, right? And like ultimately got out. They live on a busy street and was running away from everyone. And then the neighbor was like, "I'll bring my dog out." There's a dog fight, there's a redirect bite, there's a tackling the dog, and he wiggles free and just to go after the dog again. And he has heartworm, so we can't
The
exercise
local Facebook
properly.
pages know of this dog. He's like posted
Oh
every
my God. So
weekend.
I'm feeling for these people, first of all, because this sounds like hell, right? Like
Yeah.
living with this sounds like hell. And they want to be able to do all sorts of stuff with him. And I was like, I'm not, I would, I had the e-collar conversation with her. I'm like, it's definitely not where we would start. I don't even know if it's where we would finish. Who knows how far we'd get with this dog, but like, would you be open to it? And she, not only was she not open to the e-collar, I got the sense that she was not open to really anything but rewarding him. And that's a situation where it would just be a waste of her money. It would be a waste of her money to work with me. She really, really needs to go somewhere where she's going to be more comfortable with whatever the training plan is. So that's definitely a situation where I'm like, this is it's such high risk. I've got small ch kids who can get bit. I've got a dog who's going to potentially run away and get hit by a car, who's comfortable going after dogs and biting people. And I need that family to be fully on board with how we train if we're gonna be successful. So, but plenty of other, like, even off leash dogs that want to be off leash, they don't need to do everything. Like, we don't need to use tools on dogs to get them off leash. I just prefer to, right?
Yeah.
If they're friendly, right? Let's say
Yeah,
if they're friendly.
yeah.
But yeah, we don't. I don't find myself having the tool conversation a ton with clients because I think it just kind of gets.
Just set the expect you meaning like you set the expectations so they kind of know if they're coming to you that that's
Yeah.
yeah, I think that's helpful to not have to explain yourself in that way. Back to the like relating that back to the sport conversation, what do you find you're doing with your own dogs that maybe you're not doing with clients? Like things that you know are really helpful for you and help you working with your dogs, but then it's hard for you to kind of bring that over.
Everything.
Because this is something that like and I guess I'll try to clarify is like sometimes there's things I'm doing with my dogs like my personal dogs and I find that it's so helpful but
Yeah.
then it's just it's so hard it's so hard it's like damn I wish I could show you this
Yeah.
magic and like I can't and like you can get kind of close to certain things or like almost trick people into doing it without them really knowing that they're doing it and like that's what I feel
So
like makes you good if you could do that. I feel like I don't know. I've been wanting to ask you this question because I feel like you might have some good insights
yes,
on this.
I do, and it actually might surprise you, because
Uh-oh.
of. Hold on, Andy, are you in here? Could you let Moon Pie outside? Oh, thank you. It's like I haven't gone out in a while. Yes, so this might surprise you because I am, I went through the TWC program and I'm certified through that. I don't do a ton of with my clients. I don't encourage them to reward with toys a ton for pet dog obedience.
Interesting.
We use a lot of play in training. I want to be clear. We do, like, our first obedience class is basically this is how you play properly with your dog. But I don't like using a ton of toys to build pet dog obedience because I don't want the emotional state in a pet dog leash walking or stay to be the same as the emotional state in play or the emotional state in my competition down. So we do use lots of toys, but I use them different than I would with my pet dogs. I'm sorry, with my personal dogs. So that's probably the biggest difference. My obedience people or my folks who take classes where we're working on more precision and more competition style, we're definitely using lots of toys for reward. But my folks who just want a nice loose leash walking on the rail trail and a nice downstay for the brewery, we're not rewarding with a toy for that.
Yeah, exactly. 'Cause
Oh, sorry.
then you're getting this like emotionally amped dog. Like, for example, like I want my dog to be calm. This is something for me, 'cause when I first met you, I was like purely force free. Like, I just graduated Caring Prior Academy with Baloo. I know you had Bamba. I feel like we connected like when Instagram first started, and I think some of the issues with Baloo were completely caused with like getting him amped up, and it looked flashy and great and it was fun and he looked happy, but it's not what you want when you're teaching a dog to be like calm when someone's walking in. And it's hard because it kind of goes against the narrative where it's like, well, why wouldn't you want to reward your dog? Or why wouldn't you know, recently I made a post on Instagram about like not rewarding tons of check-ins when I'm like walking in a park with my dog. And it's like, especially when you have these dogs that are like, they like training, they like working, they're ready, like going at 100 miles per hour. And then you start adding, like, okay, I'm gonna tug with a dog in the house to teach them to greet a guest coming in to try to make them calm. Like, you're not.
Yeah, so I'd say that's. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No, go ahead.
So I'm thinking more on it. Like I do reward my dogs. They have their pet dog obedience that we mostly reward with food, and then their competition obedience that I'll do a combo of food and play, but pretty heavy play. I'd say the other thing, especially nowadays, that I do a lot with when I'm teaching new skills with my dogs versus pet dogs. I don't lure my dogs anymore. Like Rue, I don't even think Rue knows how to follow a lure. Because I just taught her through like physical pressure and then releasing to play. And it's been amazingly successful for her. Like she's got beautiful obedience. I don't do that with pet dog people because it's unless it's the best way, unless I have it, I'm like, this is the best way for you. It's not something I do a lot because it's hard to do, and the fallout for doing it wrong is so high. So that's another thing.
I was just going to say, to add to what you guys were saying before, and you kind of touched on it, is even food. I think sometimes, like you were talking specific about the use of toys and when you don't, but even I find that there are some times where, despite maybe what we were taught or what we hear, sometimes even the use of food maybe is not in the best interest for that dog
Absolutely.
for teaching whatever. Like, I mean, I was taught to do relaxation using food for so long, and it's insane to me to see how I teach it now and see the drastic difference in a dog that I have taught you maybe, okay, how to lie down using a lure or using leash pressure, and then getting rid of the food real quick, and then we go into settling or relaxation right away, and the food is just not even present. It's just interesting. Like, I had this a couple of weeks ago, and the client was like, yeah, he just keeps like pushing me, begging, like being so demanding. And we fixed that problem in like whatever it was, 5 or 10 minutes between all the stuff we ended up doing, and the dog like just fell asleep.
I gotta always consider the emotional state you want to attach to whatever you're asking of the dog. And in our group classes, I'll instruct people differently. Like I want you to rewarding this way, but you're gonna reward this way because that's just what your dog needs. So, you, Vinny, you said you had issues with Baloo when he was younger.
I don't mean issues, but just like he was just explosive. Like he doesn't calm, like he doesn't chill. Like he, and I think because everything was like reward, clicking, shaping, like everything was like a training scenario. Everything was him, like that's why when I reached out to you years ago with Spencer, and then I saw you at like with the JJAC seminar, like just teaching the word, like teaching and the enough, like that was what I was missing. Like everything was a chain, everything was keeping him in this like state of working for a reward constantly. So like even saying hi to someone, like I would teach like a hand target, and you would like bounce, nail the hand, and come back to me. You know what I mean? It was just like very, and looking back on it, it's like so fake. Like it's so like it's not even like the dog is really meeting someone. The dog is like using a person as a prop, and it looks like he's meeting someone, but it's not like he's going over and like receiving a pet from someone and like learning to accept that and then like come over and come back. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. I think Bomba has a lot of the same. I had a lot of the same fallout with Bomba. I just had a lot less drive in him than you do in Blue. But yeah, because he's clicker trained, and I did a lot of shaping with him and a lot of rewarding natural behavior, and he's very food motivated. And even to this day, I bring him to the training room to just be like a distraction for a client dog, and he's just like, let me offer you stuff. Let me just
Oh,
offer
yeah.
you everything, right?
It was
And
just.
if I had like Rue doing that'd be a nightmare.
I was just going to say, you were saying about like rewarding natural behavior. And I was just thinking about this last night about, and I don't know if this is where you were saying, but for me, when I was thinking about it, I used to do a lot of reward, like good offered behavior.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were saying. And so it's just funny. I was just thinking about this last night because like Quest, my younger Kelpie could be very intense. And I was just observing some things about her that were like starting to bug me a little bit that like just started happening. And I was just thinking about, wow, if I was like rewarding all this stuff like before, like what I used to do before I got her, I mean, she would be up my ass constantly.
Monster, right?
Yeah, because of just the like how food driven she is, and she'll like sit there and you can feel her eyes coming through your back when she's standing behind you or just waiting there quietly. And I'm not even saying that doing something like that is necessarily wrong, because I do think that there are certain dogs that can definitely benefit from rewarding an offered or good behavior. But I was just thinking about how much it was drilled into me. And even like a local vet behaviorist office, how they were giving that exercise out, like I think it's called times 50 exercise or something,
Oh, yeah.
where like you
Yeah,
have
I've
50
seen that before.
or something throughout the day, and you're supposed to reward like at least 50 times throughout the day the offered behaviors the dog
Oh
is
my
doing.
God.
It's
Yeah,
I'm
it's like a whole
like,
protocol or something. I think I've seen it before.
yeah,
And then when your dog is amped up, they can give it meds.
and it's just, well, you have to, Vinny, you have to create the problem to then have the solution for her,
That's
right?
right. I mean, that's brilliant. That's
It's a good
brilliant
idea.
marketing.
Yeah, you have to create the problem to then have, a solution for that problem. So, I was just thinking about that last night, actually, because I just was observing how intense Quest is in certain situations. And it's like, there are just some dogs, when you do those things, it's of course it's going to amp them up. I mean, especially those dogs who are just so food motivated and driven.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I don't even train Rue in my house if I can help it. Like
So that's
I
what I want to touch on, because you said it before and it made me really happy. Like that's something that's very different also, and I feel like it's related, and I feel like it really helps, is like I almost never train. Like I don't even know if I'm in my living room upstairs and I like told Zim to sit, like I think he would look at me like, what do you even mean in this context? Like even though he can go on a Mondeo field and look impressive, like I don't think he would. He doesn't know place, he doesn't. Like I could tell him to stop, like stay, and probably like no, don't do that. And then other than that, it's like I just like completely like it's wild. Like he's just wild in the house. And then I do have to be aware of certain things because a Malinois and just driving nuts dogs. Like if I start pairing, like if I'm down here and I say let's go upstairs and we go up the stairs and then I put him in the yard, like now going up the stairs, he's going up the stairs with the intensity he has for the love of being in the yard, and then he's fucking like nailing the shit. So then I'm like, okay, now I have to stay upstairs and then go upstairs and then chill for a little bit, then let you in the, like I need to. Because like even without using food or toys, like they can, once they like a thing and then you're pairing that shit, like
Absolutely. Absolutely. We deal with a lot of accidental injuries because of that. It's like people, I see
so
people like want to play with letting like random people play with their dogs or whatever. And I'm like, I would not let a random person play with my Staffords because they like, especially Rue, like she'll chase the ball wherever it's going. And I don't trust you
Chris is
to
going to be
throw
so upset to hear
it.
that.
Can't
Chris
really.
is going to be so upset because all she wants to do is play with Rue all
Well, I trust Chris now.
the
I trust
time. She was like, t make
her.
sure she was like, make sure Jen knows that like we really love Rue and I want to
Yeah.
play
No, I
with her.
trust you guys.
I
She's
told her she's not
Rue
allowed
and
to.
Spencer and you. No, she's fine. But like the random my kid, I'm like, be careful how you throw that ball because she'll chase it wherever it goes.
Oh my God. Yeah, I don't even play fetch with Zim anymore. I have a video of him like running full speed into my fences by the last time I played Frisbee. Just
Yeah.
like dangerous. It's just, wild.
She's gone full speed into my chain link fence, and I've seen her legs go through the fence, and I'm just
God.
like,
Oh
ugh.
God.
Yeah.
I've had that with Quest. She leaped up in the air after a ball that like just bounced at the right time. She
Yeah.
caught it. And then as she caught it, she slammed her whole body in the fence. I was like, never again. I'm not doing this.
I have it on video somewhere. I forget which dog it was, but I was prepping one of them for trial, and I was like, I'm just gonna have a really light training session. And I threw the ball like not that far. I think it was Moon Pie, and she just like ass over tea kettle, just just did this fumble in a way that I'm like, I might have to go to the vet for that because that I don't even know how you did that. Yeah, they're not careful dogs, that's for sure.
Heard they are good with kids, though. And since you have two and kids, would you vouch for that, or is that
No.
no, they're not?
No. I mean, every dog is different. All three of my dogs have at least growled at my kids once. Mostly deservingly. Like we're pretty careful. So I've got a 4-year-old and I've got a 1-year-old. And my 4-year-old at this point, the dogs are great with her, but she's four. She's got like a brain that works. But when she was 8, 9 months old, Moon Pie bit her like right in the face. It was
Wow.
luckily it didn't break skin, but it shocked me because I was just surprised at the scenario. It was a very like she my daughter just kind of reached over to touch her, and she went to grab her ears, so I took her hand off Moon Pie's ears. My daughter was sitting in my lap, and Moon Pie just like got up and looked at her and nailed her in the face. Yeah. So no, I would not say that they're great. I don't know that any dogs are really that. I think they exist, right? Like I know they exist, those dogs that are really good with kids, but they're not in my house. That was the only issue with Moon Pie. That was what, 3.5 years ago, and she's been fine. And she actually really likes my 4-year-old now. She
And
likes this.
it was a kid's fault anyway.
Yeah, it was a kid's fault.
That
But
wasn't.
that stage where my kids were going through like crawling with my
Yeah.
first kid, Moon Pie was really weird about it, and I didn't notice any weirdness with my second. But my younger daughter is much more physical with the dogs, in a way that I'm just like she went and hugged Bamba today, which I like for people don't I have a 11-year-old Sheba who's been aggressive with people since I brought him home at 10 weeks old, right? And has absolutely tried to bite kids in the past. He's actually the most trustworthy with the kids because he'll let me really come and handle it. But yeah, my 1-year-old like hugged him today, and I was like, don't be crazy, don't do that. Like he doesn't want that. So I don't have any like there's nothing crazy going on, but I'm very cautious with my kids and my dogs. They spend a lot of time separated if they're especially my younger one, like she can be around the dogs as long as she's occupied. But the second she's like, "Oh, hey, dogs, let me grab your face and grab your ears," I'm like, "No, we're done with this." And my 4-year-old would be unrestricted, except for the 1-year-old is has to be restricted. So.
I'm glad you're saying that because I feel like a lot of people don't always understand the separation part. And I was wondering, one of the questions I wanted to ask you, because I don't have kids myself, is it's one of the areas where I feel like I'm not able to fully put myself in the shoes of clients that have kids. Like, you're there and you know they're trying to pay attention, but there's like three kids like running around and screaming and they're trying to juggle all this stuff. And I was wondering if you found yourself helping people differently once you had kids, or like the way you approach working with people that have kids changed because you were able to.
I don't I think I can speak with more authority because I've lived it, and I tell people that story about Moon Pie all the time when I have clients who are like, yeah, my dog's aggressive with kids and or aggressive with people, and oh, by the way, we're having a baby in 6 months. I go, okay, well, here's the deal, right? Because up until that situation with Moon Pie, she'd always been great with kids. Like she'd always been, I'd not had any aggression issues with people ever. And it was a very like, wasn't like they were unattended, right? Like my daughter was
Right
on
there.
my lap and Moon Pie was next to me. And it was a very like, I was right there watching the whole thing and advocating for my dog too. Like I was immediately there to stop Ellie from grabbing her, and she still felt the need to do that. So I tell people that in the like this like shook my confidence to my core. Like I questioned like, can I even keep this dog, right? So I tell people that story as a reality check that like nice friendly dogs bite as a way of setting boundaries. And I really think the most realistic thing to do, you were kind of getting at it, Vinny, is a lot of management. Because both pre-children, I think I had unrealistic expectations of how much the dog and the kids could be together. Now living it, you have to have a way of keeping them separate, really most of the time. Like small doses of enjoying being together is what we focus on. Like we'll all go to the training room together. So I can have three dogs and two kids running around my training room because the kids are more interested in the stuff in the training room than the dogs. But the second my 1-year-old is like, "Oh, let me grab this dog's collar and grab her skin," I'm like, "No, we gotta stop this."
It's
So.
interesting because, and I don't want to make this about training methods. It's just like where my mind went as you guys were talking about it. I just find it so interesting because you definitely have one side who naturally is going to say management, etc. Maybe sometimes a little too much at times or whatever. And then the other side that goes to the other extreme, where whether or not they say management, they're trying to throw the dog in the mix right away and start doing all these obedience skills. And you must be under, this control and that control, and you're not allowed to basically have any feelings or emotion, etc. And I just think it's kind of, I think it's kind of interesting also because I just, as you were talking, I was just thinking about like, this is why there are so many issues within our industry, because you have someone like yourself who said before, like, you use tools when you feel it's appropriate, etc. But then you're also sitting here saying, hey, like, use fucking common sense. And like, we need to have the child and the dog separated. And we need to go a step further and teach the dog, if possible, prior, and if not on the spot, like, you now need to learn how to coexist, but also be separated and understand that, it's something that like is more comforting and we're doing this for a particular reason. It's just interesting to me because a lot of people, especially on maybe the opposing side, would probably be very surprised to hear someone like yourself say that.
Yeah.
Because
I I think there is a dangerous, and I'll say it for you, there's a dangerous trend in the balance community of thinking that anything is possible. There are whatever
I
the
think that's a good
dog
way of saying
problems
it.
are. Yeah, they're there. And I see it in my own communities, and I talk about it with I was talking about it earlier today. There are, and I don't know why, but there is this belief that anything can be changed and the dog can be rehabilitated and fit into the lifestyle. And I have a really hard time getting on board with that, especially when there are small children involved, because small children, I'm talking like under two, especially under three, under two, are so unpredictable and so scary. Like my 1-year-old scares the shit out of me. Like she is terrifying. She bites me. I'm not letting her
Like
bite. Like,
little feral psychopath.
she is absolutely feral. She's hilarious, but she's terrifying. And I'm separating them from my dog's safety, not for my kids' safety. Like if my kids were cool, my dogs wouldn't do anything, right? But they again, my 4-year-old's great. She's awesome with the dogs, but you know, that when they're first learning to move, and up until they become a little bit more reasonable as small children, they're scary. And dogs should be allowed to be away, be removed from that.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll add to that because as someone that, like, when I first started and wasn't a trainer, I was using balance methods, had a horrible experience with it, so I went all the way to the other end, and then now I'm like right back in more of the middle of where I've been. Is when I started using tools again. First, I started experimenting with my own dogs because I was like, all right, I'm gonna see, where I can get with this. I quickly realized that like I was limiting my abilities with the people I was working with and with my own dogs, and like I was causing issues that could have been dealt with. And then like where I'm at now, and I think it's because of maybe some of whether it's the same or just the trend of me kind of being like, well, how far does this go? Like, is there a way to be a superhuman wizard that can take any dog and then now fix it? Like, how wrong was I? You know what I mean? Like, you start questioning, because at the end of the day, like I at least hope that I'm going to continue learning and continue getting smarter and continue, whatever. And when I see someone confidently being like, I could, yeah, oh yeah, bit like five people in the face, like, look at it now, it's fixed. Like, I'm gonna give you my, like, I might not trust you or believe you all the way, but like, I'm gonna stop and be like, all right, what do you have to say? Because, like, yeah, I'm constantly wanting to learn. So, I think that's interesting for you to say because, as someone that's, it's been years now, but more newer to doing balance with clients more and more, it's like, okay, like where is the limit to this? Like, and I think I agree with you. Like, I just had a call yesterday with someone with a little kid in the house and a big dog, and it's like, I don't know what you want me to tell you. Like, there's no shame in being like, no, like I don't know what you want me to tell you with that. But
What was
onto
like?
that whole limit thing, like I don't know if you feel the same way or where you think that's coming from. Like, do you think, like, are they lying? Are they actually wizards? Like, is it all like smoke and mirrors? Or, like I think there probably are dogs, because to be fair, on the other end, I feel like the community, there's a dangerous trend of just like manage, medicate, kill. You know what I
Sure.
mean? Like, that's the new Lima. It's like, and I am not with that either. So.
I think folks who are saying they can train everything, do everything, rehabilitate everything, just haven't had it go bad yet. And
Well,
I've had it go bad. Like I've had it go bad.
I think that, I mean, I think that some of them have had it go bad, but they're gonna say that it was the
Yeah,
owner.
maybe.
Because I've definitely seen that. And their
Yeah,
behavior
sure.
has not changed, and they're still doing because they
Yeah.
can't, some of those people keep me in business.
Yeah, sure. And it's probably a combination. Some people just haven't seen it go bad yet, or haven't had it go bad yet, and others who just that's their their claim to fame to be a, an internet famous dog trainer, and they hide that stuff and whatever, maybe. But I also think it's interesting that some of the folks that I'm thinking about that are, wanting to take only serious cases and work with really complex behavior problems, also haven't been doing it very long. Kind of see that trend of like I'm kind of new. I don't know. I've been training dogs for, what year are we in? What year is it? Is this 2025?
Where
What
are we?
year is
We were
it?
just, actually before the show, because I was like, you have to tell Jen that we're like basing how time is moving, like on how old her kids are looking. We're like, I'm like, oh my God, how did this girl get like this age already? She's like probably taller than my short ass.
My 4-year-old is so tall. I'm like, what happened? But yeah, I started training dogs in 2009 professionally, right? So I've
So
been
that was
doing,
like 3 years ago. Like 3 years.
2009. This is a few years ago,
It seems like
right?
it was
That
like 5 years ago.
was COVID was 2010, right?
Oh God.
I've been doing it for a while. And there are, I have like a risk assessment I do in my head for when someone approaches me with a behavior case. And there are absolutely cases that I'm just like, I'm so uncomfortable doing this. I'm not the person for you. And I see folks who've been, training dogs for 2 or 3 years taking on very serious behavior cases, and I'm just like, maybe something I don't, maybe that's it.
Well,
But
I think some of that comes from not knowing as much as you know, number one. I think that's part of it, is that some of those individuals may not know as much, because 2 or 3 years is nothing. You still don't know a lot of the things. I mean, even 5 years in, there's so many things that
you
you
don't even know what you don't know.
know. Yeah. So I think that that could be part of it. And I think sometimes it depends on who you're maybe learning from. So I think some people on, and this goes for both sides, I think people are learning from someone and they see them doing it. They're working with them, being mentored, and they're kind of under the assumption maybe that, oh, okay, well now I can do it because I've seen them do it a bunch of times, or they've told, my mentor has told me I can do this because look, I mean, that jackass over there is doing this. So, I mean, you're already, halfway better because you're not making those stupid decisions. So, sure, if that asshole is, training dogs or doing this type of case, so can you, and that's not true.
Absolutely.
The one thing I will say, because like the way I started in this whole mess with Jester was I had a dog that like I was being turned away by people. And as you were saying before, with the way you felt with that sport trainer, like I still think back to when I was a clueless dog owner with a dog that I truly loved and was sweet in the house, but was biting random people that I didn't know and I didn't know what to do. And then I reached out to professionals and they were all just like, sorry, I can't help you. Sorry, I can't help. Or they'd come for one day and then ghost me. And I went to almost every local trainer and they all just were just like disappearing. And so, yeah, when the confident guy with the Malinois and the, tinted out truck came to my house and like, oh yeah, this is easy. It's like I understand why
Yeah,
people
absolutely.
feel lost and then they go to someone like that. And then, I'm sure he, I know because he's local to me that he does have success and then he builds his name around that, So it's hard. It's hard, because like, what do people do? And then even myself, like I feel that urge of like, I want to be able to help. Like I want to be able to help no matter what. I don't want to be like, oh, sorry, because I don't want to do to someone what I felt like happened to me, where I was stuck and then had nowhere to turn.
Definitely. So, and this is for other professionals who might be listening. If you are going to have a client reach out to help you and you know that you are not the trainer for them, you've got to provide them with resources. You have to have somewhere to send them. That's definitely I don't refer a lot to other trainers, but if I have something that I'm like, I can't take this on, I've got to have somewhere to send them. You see that dynamic, that like almost desperate, right? Because you're desperate at that point. You've got a very serious problem and no one will help you. I mean, you see that a bit in the service dog world, especially like privately trained service dogs. You've got a parent who has a kid and they want to get a dog for their kid and no one will help them. And then all of a sudden, some random private trainer is like, yeah, I'll help you for $30,000. They get totally taken advantage of. Right. So it's
Well, that happens too with a lot of the board and train stuff. You know,
absolutely.
like I mean, like I just had a client recently, they're like they paid 10 grand and the dogs are still fighting with each other. And I was like, well, yeah, of course they're still fighting because they didn't recreate this scenario in their facility, their high volume facility. It's not possible. Like, this is not your home with your kids. And you know, like the client realizes it now, but they got taken full advantage of something like that.
Absolutely. People suck.
People thought, all right, that's the end of the episode. No, yeah, and I think, you know, social media obviously doesn't help too, because when you have, you know, if you're teaching a golden doodle to sit, that's not going to really get a lot of views. But if you have like a German Shepherd with 10 bites and you're bored and training it, and you know, it just is going to give you better content, I guess.
Vinny, when did you get
Uh-oh.
like Insta famous? You have a huge following.
I hate to admit this, but the truth is that Zach George shared one of my posts like years ago, like 5 years ago, because it was like super motivating and like positive looking, and I got a lot from that. And then I had just like a few posts went viral, honestly.
Wild. How old are
I
you?
actually wish I did more. It was when Instagram shifted to Reels, they were like really pushing Reels when people weren't really doing it. And I just noticed that like when I would post, I would get more traction. And then once I started to get enough traction where like anytime I posted, I would have trolls come after me, it like really punished me and I no longer wanted to post. And I'm just starting to feel comfortable enough to post again and like, you know, one way or the other, like they're already coming out no matter what you do. And it's always, Anthony knows this, they always wait until 1 o'clock in the morning so I don't see the comment until like I get up to go to the bathroom, and then I'm staring at the fucking ceiling until like 4 a.m. like, god damn it. So I gotta start posting at like 9 a.m. so that like I have all day to process it.
But he secretly, I think he secretly enjoys it, because I keep telling
I
him,
like it. It gets me fired up.
why open the app at 1 in the morning? Why do it?
So I just
Why
want
not
to,
just
I
leave
just,
it
yeah, I'm just a
alone?
glutton for punishment. I love it. I really do. Like, I do. This is gonna sound wrong, but like, I do like arguing, but like, not to argue. Like, I genuinely do feel like people can learn from each other. And I feel like I argue. I said this to a friend recently, and they were like, what? I was like, I argue with myself. And they're like, you argue with yourself? I'm like, yeah, like, I'll like think of a thing. And I'm sitting there like fighting with myself in my own head. And like, I do think that that is useful. So
Yeah, sure. I don't know. I just was like, yeah,
you're
again,
like, yeah, sure.
we've just been connected on Instagram for so long, and I like looked at your account recently for some reason, probably because I wanted to watch something, and I looked at your follower and I
Yeah.
was like, when did that
No, it honestly has happened like slowly over time, and it's been at like the same, you know, now it's like every time I post, I lose just as much as I gain, because I
Yeah,
just
sure.
like, that's just like what it is. So, but
Yeah.
yeah, I don't know. I
Social
wouldn't
media
say famous though. I'm not making the big bucks off of it yet. Once you see me doing lives every week with like random people for that paycheck, then you'll know. Then
talent.
you'll know that I'm doing it. It's too much stress. So
Good
what are
wrap
you
up.
passionate about? What kind of thoughts are going on in your head?
So we have I have a group class building course that I've done, like a virtual course where it's several virtual lessons where I help people kind of figure out what sort of things they want to teach in a group class and how to break that down and write curriculum and then
Oh, that's interesting.
make support for the client from that. So I have been really into that. And if I was a better business person, I'd talk about it more and share all the recorded sessions that I have because I have it all recorded. But I'm having a really good time with it. So it's like ideally for folks who are mainly doing private lessons and board and trains, and they have enough past clients that they're looking to build more of a community and do more group classes around supporting those clients post board and train and private. I love it because I love that with my own clients, like having a place where they can gather and kind of work through the same things together. So I am pretty into that right now. That's my thing.
I like that.
It's
Yeah,
fun.
that's cool. That's really And
interesting.
so these are like classes where only your past clients are coming, and you're kind of working on like continuing education or brushing up on what they've been doing, or like kind of funneling them into the obedience stuff that you're doing, or what?
We sorry, there's this thumb.
No, the thumb has entered
We had that happen
the
in one of our other episodes
chat.
where this thumb just showed up on the screen. Like, I can't not address this. I'm sorry. So we've got all sorts of group classes, right? Like we've got group classes that range from like folks who have never been here before to people who have been training with us for years. And the online program I'm offering for other professionals is really, where do you start? What sort of group class should you be offering to start to maybe bring in new clients, but maybe also support past clients? But we've got like 20 different classes we teach. It's
Wow, that's
yeah.
awesome. That
It's
gives me a
kind
headache thinking about
Yeah,
that.
well, that's why I don't do it all myself. We do basics, you know. We do like puppy, basic obedience, advanced obedience, canine good citizen. We have a lot of scent classes. We have a shed hunt class. We have traveling obedience. We have drop-in obedience. We have rally. We have precision. We have therapy dog. We're developing some others.
Is it
Yeah.
set up? You said before you have something set up sort of like an obedience club. So is all that stuff something that is more like a club atmosphere where like people can go to any of those things, like a drop-in, or are there only certain things that you do? And because I've
So,
been thinking about like the
yeah.
whole concept of like almost a club type of thing in a way, just from my reactivity classes. And so many like people that I just figured, all right, after we do a bunch, like they're gonna stop. And like over a year later, some of these people still want to come
Yeah.
to
Yeah.
class.
So club is specifically for clients who have done a lot of training with us and are looking to do more out of the box stuff. So we actually have three different clubs and they're all invite only. So don't ask me to join the club because you can't. First of all.
I'm coming. I'm coming.
So we've been Mallory, who trains here, she's been running a scent club for just over a year now. And they meet, it's an annual membership. So the client buys it, they get 12 months worth of training where you get two meetups a month plus a bunch of other stuff that we offer throughout the year. And that club, all they're doing is different scent games, whether it's essential oils or lost articles or shed hunt or man trailing or whatever. That's the thing they do in that club. Obedience club, I just started, same deal. Annual membership, two meets a month. It's usually like a 2-hour training meetup. And all we're focusing on is AKC style obedience skills. Sometimes we're doing like a bunch of mini privates. Sometimes we're doing group work. It kind of depends on who I have and what they need and what we're focusing on. And then we're launching a pet dog club in April that is for like the everywhere dog sort of clients. They've done a bunch of training with us and they really just want to do more work at the rail trail or go to breweries or do off-leash pack hikes or whatever. So pet dog club. I feel like I'm giving away secrets. Maybe I shouldn't
No,
be
you
telling
don't. Yeah, you don't have to,
you
obviously. I'm just
this.
curious.
But pet dog club, basically every month is a different training focus. And then we have like little competitions embedded throughout the year. So the like 1 month we'll focus on recall, and like 2 months later we have recall relay races. So that is brand new for us this year. And Jill is running that, who also works here. But yeah, club is super cool. It's a great place for clients to go who are really training enthusiasts, and have more long-term goals, versus just constantly trying to figure out what group class to put them in next. They kind of just pay you once, you don't have to worry about it anymore, and you know you've got a set amount of time with them to get them to where they need to be. So
Nice.
that's what's up.
Cool. So it sounds like you got like nothing going
Yeah, nothing going
on.
on.
Is there anything you want to shout out or where can people find you? Anything,
Yeah,
upcoming things or
well, actually, I'll be in New York soon. I'll be in New York, in the Albany area, April 5th, Saturday, April 5th. I'm doing the morning will be a competition style healing clinic, and then in the afternoon it's like a intro to rally. So I've got some different levels of competitors, but it's the rally stuff is meant to be like you've never heard of it before, come check it out. And then some of the more advanced people I'll do some more advanced work with. So that is at Adventure Tales, Miranda Lamorte. She'd kill me if I didn't say her name.
Yeah. Oh, I've
You
actually
gotta
been meaning
actually
to reach
know
out
who
to
that
her
is.
too. See, she's someone else that I want to have on here because
Yeah,
yeah,
I mean,
she's
Miranda's
super
great.
cool.
Yeah,
Yeah.
Miranda's awesome. Absolutely. She's a wonderful conversationist. I spent 2 hours chatting with her about training this morning. I was like very passionately
She's
talking
so funny.
to
I remember
her.
she was like sitting next to me at the JJAC seminar, and I was like, I wish my brain worked like that. Like, she was cracking me up the whole time. I don't even remember exact. I think like whenever someone needed like a name for a dog or a name for a cue, she would come up with like the funniest for like cue names. Like, I need a new cue for this. And she would just have like the most ridiculous thing. So, yeah,
She was
I definitely have to
probably
have her
like
on.
heckling Jay a little bit also.
Probably. Yeah. She was definitely hilarious.
But yeah,
So.
you should reach out to her. She's awesome. So she's having me out to do this like one day event. I'm pretty sure working spots are sold out, but there are audit spots available if anyone wants to come hang out in the Albany area. So yeah, I'll be doing that. I'm looking to do something similar closer to where I live in Massachusetts, but the dates are not confirmed yet. And yeah, I'm just doing a lot of trialing this spring.
There you go. I love
So
it.
yeah, so that's what's up. You can find me at The Right Paw. Find me on Instagram. It's The Right Paw on Instagram, or The Right Paw Obedience School on Facebook. I'm gonna double check my Instagram. I feel like I said the wrong.
That's great.
Definitely. Yeah, no, it is The Right Paw. I've changed
There you
so
go.
I have changed my business name like three times, which means I've changed social media names several times. But yeah, it's all The Right Paw. We're in central Massachusetts.
Did you say
And
you changed your business name a bunch of times?
several times, yeah.
Let me ask you a question on
Yeah.
that before we wrap up. What is like, did you find that that caused an issue for your business? Did you find like it
I
would?
changed it. I changed it to avoid issues.
Okay.
So my original business name. So I started my business in 2014, I think. Was Bound to Bond Dog Training.
I
And
remember that.
there's apparently a blog called Bound to Bond that has a really robust following. As all about bondage.
BDSM.
So I was,
Oh,
and
God.
this is like, do your research, you idiot.
You
And
should have just became the right bond then after
the right
it.
So I'm such a stubborn person that like once I like made everything official and realized it, I was like, it'll be fine. People will find me. They
Oh
absolutely found that blog
no.
before they
People were
found
showing up with
me.
leather suits
Oopsies.
on.
Yeah. And so then I would have a few clients be like, oh yeah, I found what I thought was your website. And they'd like blush a little bit. I'm like, all right, I gotta rebrand. So that's when
This
I
is
went
my dog, and it's just a
with
person dressed up.
it was horrible.
Oh boy, that's wild.
So I had to change my name. So we changed it, or we I changed it to Banks Canine Solutions, which I would have kept. Not the best name, but it was like not there was nothing wrong with it that I had to change it. It's just that I bought The Right Paw, And the right paw had been in business much longer than me. Right paw's been here for like 30 years and has been on the internet much longer than me, and has a much longer history of word of mouth than Banks Canine did. So I just
What
merged.
about Bound to Bond, though?
The
There's
people
like
of
people at home right
Princeton.
now going on
Yeah.
the website.
They're
They're
about to get a bunch of new traffic. I haven't
like, hey
not checked in on that blog in quite some time.
now.
So,
Oh my God.
so yeah, it's just I've changed the name of my Instagram account and my Facebook page a few times, but no more changes now. It was worth it, and it's all for, and people still find me, right? So my Banks Canine clients still find me here, so it's no big deal because I redirected them all here. So
Yeah.
yeah.
Cool. Well, that was a good way to wrap it up, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. I
Thanks
just
so much,
and
Jen.
on that
We'll
note.
have to do it again. We'll stay in touch. I'm excited to see you guys your competitions. I'm sure you're gonna do great.
Oh, thanks so much. Thank you guys so much for having me. You guys are a good time, good chat.
Thank you. Thanks for
Anytime.
coming on. It was nice to meet you.
Yeah, it was nice to meet you also. All right, you guys, have a good one.
See you guys later. Bye.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Canine Classroom. If you liked the show, make sure to smack that like button, share the show with your friends, and give us a rating. Until next time, class dismissed.